You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas.
Because they really do truly care more about abortion than actually having the Democratic Party win.
This was not a good faith effort to get someone to bake a cake that meant a lot to him. He was trolling Jack Phillips. And you know who's trolling Jack Phillips now? Also, the state of Colorado.
It violates the narrative that the mainstream media has chosen, which is the only way you can ever write about homosexuality is with gays as victims of oppression.
It is a horrendous act of pastoral malpractice to deprive the congregation of the content of the small catechism.
Confessional Lutheran missionary campus pastors love Issues Etc.
I imagine if I were Jack Phillips and his attorneys, I would consider myself booked for the time being. It's hard to imagine how the man who is just a humble baker of cakes and of other bakery items has any time. That's a tough business, by the way. You're up very early in the morning. How does he have time to run his business when he's being constantly targeted and harassed by the state of Colorado or any random lawyer who decides to facetiously ask him to make this or that cake that they know in advance is against his religious beliefs or against his conscience? It's a wonder an honest businessman can earn a buck nowadays if he's simply trying to run his business in accord with his conscience and his beliefs. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, August 22nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about discrimination and tolerance in the case of Colorado baker Jack Phillips. Dr. Daryl Paul will be our guest. He's professor of political science at Williams College. A little bit later on the program, Jeff Jacoby of the Boston Globe joins us to talk about Chelsea Clinton's recent comment to a group promoting Roe v. Wade, especially in the run-up to the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. She made an economic argument for abortion. She essentially said that since 1973, women entering the workforce, somehow connected to Roe v. Wade, were able to add $3.5 trillion to the economy. Is her argument historically accurate? Is it economically accurate? And what about the morality of that kind of an argument? We'll talk with Jeff Jacoby about it a little bit later. Pastor Hans Feeney joins us to respond to a column in the Washington Post on the faith of superheroes. He's a senior contributor to The Federalist. And then we're going to spend some time with Pastor Stephen Parks. Part 11 of our series, our ongoing series on responding to Roman Catholic proof texts, there's a story in the book of Acts about the Ethiopian eunuch. He's reading from the book of Isaiah. He doesn't understand what he's reading, and he needs it to be explained to him, in this case by Philip. The argument made by the Roman Catholic Church is this is a clear example why individuals simply cannot clearly read Scripture apart from the magisterium of the church. They need an authoritative magisterial authority in the church to explain the Bible to them, because the Bible, after all, they say, is not that clear. Does that case of the Ethiopian eunuch argue for the Roman Catholic position? We'll respond to it in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Now, feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about discrimination and tolerance in the case of Colorado baker Jack Phillips, Dr. Daryl Paul, professor of political science at Williams College, author of the book From Tolerance to Equality, How Elites Brought America to Same-Sex Marriage, and a recent column for First Things titled Compelling Tolerance. Dr. Paul, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much.
Why were you able to predict round two, so to speak, in Jack Phillips' case way back in June?
The Masterpiece Cake Shop decision that was handed down in June, it was written by Justice Kennedy, one of his last opinions before he stepped down from the court, was a very, very narrow decision. And it didn't really decide any of the substantive issues at stake, particularly freedom of religion and freedom of speech. All the Masterpiece Cake Shop decision back in June said was that the decision-making process had been wrong. It had been subjected to anti-religious animus. Since it didn't really make any decision on the substantive issues, I figured this was going to have to come back, and in fact, it has.
So is the problem here, just to get specific to the Phillips case, is the problem here with Jack Phillips' behavior? Is the problem with the law in Colorado or the Civil Rights Commission in Colorado? Where does the real problem, in your opinion, exist?
I think it's a combination of the law and the interpretation of the law. The Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act got both sexual orientation and gender identity included in it back in 2008. And, of course, as with every law, it depends on how the courts interpret it. And so the interpretation of the treatment of customers has been interpreted in a way to suggest that Phillips is denying service to particular customers. In the earlier case, to a same-sex couple wanting a wedding cake. In the current issue, a transgendered customer who wanted a transition celebration cake. Phillips' argument, though, is that he's not discriminating against any people at all, but he's discriminating between products and between ideas, which he says he has every right to.
So bring us up to speed on how Jack Phillips found himself again the target of an accusation of discrimination. The details, the background is a bit salacious at times, isn't it?
It is. I think your choice of the word target is right on. Phillips comes to prominence in 2012 when his case is taken up by the Colorado Civil Rights Division, the earlier one about the wedding cake, and he becomes pretty infamous pretty quickly among progressives, especially in Colorado, where this is talked about a lot, as you might imagine. So there happened to be a local lawyer, transgendered lawyer by the name of Autumn Scardina. This lawyer decided to make Phillips a target under the law. And so the timing of some of these requests, shall we call them that, for different kinds of baking products are pretty suspicious. So for example, the transgender celebration cake request went in on the very day that the Supreme Court decided that it would hear an appeal from Phillips on the original case. And the most salacious version, which I'll just suggest that it had something to do with Satan and sex toys on the cake, was made on the very day that the Supreme Court handed down its Masterpiece Cake Shop ruling. So this person had clearly been targeting Phillips. In fact, Phillips thinks that there were probably five requests overall, most of them asking for satanic kinds of images. And the Colorado law, I think, is completely open to these kinds of behaviors.
So apparently, the cake that was requested of Phillips' business, not Phillips personally, was to celebrate the transition from male to female on the part of this lawyer. Is that correct?
Yes.
And how would you summarize Phillips' reasons as they're stated for not doing that?
So his response was that he does not believe that one can change one's sex and therefore feels that he has a religious right under the Constitution to decline to participate in the celebration of something that he feels not just is sort of physically impossible, but something that he feels is morally wrong. And that was his response to the lawyer, which was more or less the same response that he gave to the same-sex couple back in 2012 when they requested the wedding cake. Notably, when he turned that couple away back in 2012, the mother of one of the men called the shop and essentially tried to kind of order the cake on her own, and he declined it as well to her.
There are those who are saying, kind of automatically saying, that what's happening here is that the law is being violated because Phillips is discriminating against persons. How do you respond to that?
The courts are going to have to decide what constitutes discrimination against persons and what constitutes, I guess I would say, discrimination between goods or services or products or ideas. Phillips says, and I think he's right in this case, that he will not make certain kinds of cakes regardless of the customer. So if the transgendered lawyer's friend came in to request a transition cake, he wouldn't make it. As I said a moment ago, when the mother of one of the men in the same-sex couple that requested the wedding cake, when she came in, Phillips rejected the request as well. Now, when the Supreme Court decided this case on the very narrow grounds that I mentioned earlier back in June, Justice Kagan, who was joined in her opinion with Justice Breyer, said essentially that they still can find Phillips guilty of violating the law because of a question of whether he's making the same product or making a different product. Is a wedding cake a wedding cake a wedding cake, or is a same-sex marriage wedding cake different from an opposite-sex wedding cake? That's what the courts are going to have to decide. And at least from the opinions that were handed down in Master Peak's cake shop, the justices don't agree. And judges across the country don't really agree on what is similar treatment and what's different treatment.
Why do we need to distinguish between discrimination against persons and discrimination of ideas?
I mean, the narrow answer, I think, to that is because it is, in most circumstances, illegal to discriminate between persons or against persons. Not in all, obviously. Sometimes it's perfectly legal and right to discriminate between children and adults, or say in different kinds of sex-segregated facilities around privacy, or between, you know, people with felony convictions and those without. But for most kinds of things that I'm sure your listeners are thinking about in terms of race or national origin or sex or creed, those are roundly illegal. But what Phillips is saying is that he's not actually discriminating against persons at all, and he has every right under the Constitution to participate or not participate in lending his talents, his expressive abilities, to certain kinds of messages. And so it's one thing to say, I will not make a same-sex wedding cake, or I will not make a transgender celebration cake. That's different from saying, I will not serve same-sex couples, or I will not serve gay persons, or I will not serve transgendered persons. Because he sells products, kind of off-the-shelf things, to anybody who comes into his store. And I think making those distinctions is terribly important because, if for no other reason, it helps us live together in a pluralistic society. Americans don't agree on these kinds of issues. And if the state not just wants to force equal treatment for persons, but also equal consideration for ideas, I think we are going to get a lot more conflict in this country into the future.
In the vein of the ideas, I spoke with Jack Phillips, and one of the concerns that he expressed in an interview with him was that had he complied in the first case that went to the Supreme Court with the Colorado Civil Rights Commission's requirements of him, he would have had to have essentially instructed his staff, which includes his elderly mother and daughter, I believe, among others, his family, he would have to have instructed his staff in things completely contrary to his conscience. He would have had to have said, this is what we're going to do, although I completely think it is wrong. That's a matter not only of business practice, but of conscience there. What are your thoughts?
So in my piece in First Things that I wrote about the second Phillips case just the other day, there's a parallel case in Arizona. Two young, I think they're evangelical women, started up a shop to make handcrafted stationery and these kinds of things, and it's called Nib and Brush. And they did not want to participate in same-sex weddings, and so they went to the state of Arizona, because there's a law like this, not at the state level, but at the city level in Phoenix, to ask whether they could, within the law, do such a thing. And the court, the Arizona Court of Appeals, told them, no, you may not. And what's, I think, particularly interesting in their ruling is they essentially said that you can behave in a certain way and believe something radically different, and there's no sort of violation of one's conscience, so that these two young women, for example, could believe anything they wanted, but they could not sort of practice those beliefs. And I think that's the claim that's coming from a lot of judges in these kinds of cases. You may certainly believe whatever you want, but you have to follow the law. Your behavior has to be governed by the state. So Phillips would be perfectly free to tell his family and to tell his staff, we don't believe in any of this, what we're doing, but we're going to do it anyway. And that's essentially what the state is demanding in these cases.
And why is that, in terms of the broader framework of freedom of conscience and free exercise of religion, a lethal step?
I think the problem comes both on the freedom of religion side and as well on the freedom of speech side, because the state certainly has an ability, and I suppose in many circumstances one would say the right, to compel certain kinds of behavior that may be inconsistent with what individuals believe. But the line drawn between where is action and where is speech is the one that I think is most important here. So, for example, one could not say, well, it is part of my religion to beat people of other races, right? And no one, I assume, would sort of defend that on freedom of religion grounds. But certain kinds of acts are inherently tied to certain kinds of beliefs. And so I think what the state is trying to do here is to separate beliefs and actions and to tell persons, not just religious people, but really all people, that you can have your beliefs, but those are wholly private and they should stay out of the public sphere. In the public sphere, you act in a way that the state requires. And that, I think, robs not just religious people, but it robs all people of a tremendous amount of their liberties.
Was that at all in view when the First Amendment was crafted, this kind of privatized notion of belief as opposed to exercise?
Well, certainly this distinction between kind of private belief and public action goes all the way back to the founding fathers of liberalism, right? John Locke famously makes this distinction, and Locke was a very important intellectual influence on the Constitution. So I think it's harder to say, maybe at least from my vantage point, at least what the founders might have envisioned and might not have envisioned. But certainly I think this distinction is kind of very much part of liberalism. And I mean liberalism in a kind of broad philosophical sense. And so what the courts wind up doing over time is trying to decide where the lines are going to be drawn. And of course, the lines have been redrawn dramatically over the last 10, 20 years, and this is particularly sensitive to religious conservatives because the lines have been moved very, very far. And so I think that's why we see religious conservatives having to make the hardest decisions, at least in the kind of the last decade or so, because of the way these lines are being redrawn in new ways.
It's not as though we can continue as a society and even as a government to continue to just bring every single case to the Supreme Court. Sooner or later, we have to decide how we're going to address this nexus between what people perceive as discrimination and free exercise of religion. How do you expect it finally to be resolved?
Well, I think resolved is probably too elevated a word, but certainly it will be decided sooner or later. Now, how much people accept that decision is another question. Right now, with the retirement of Justice Kennedy, there's only 8 members on the court. The court pretty clearly decided that it did not want to revisit this issue in the fall, so I presume if it is Kavanaugh or if it's somebody else who becomes the 9th member of the court, sooner or later, and my suspicion is sooner rather than later, the court's going to revisit this. Either they're going to have to decide this federal suit that Jack Phillips' lawyers have brought against the state of Colorado, or there's another very similar case. It's called the Arlene Flowers case. It's about a florist in Washington state, and the court sent that one back to the Washington state courts to redecide on the basis of Masterpiece Cake Shop decision. But ultimately, the Supreme Court's going to decide. We, the people, are really not. And then we're going to have to reflect on what the Supreme Court has said and decide what to do next after that.
If it were decided in favor of the notion that the statement that you made before, you can believe whatever you want privately, but you need to act this way, is that, in fact, compelled tolerance?
I think it is, in a way. Of course, I tried in that title of the piece to have an ironic sort of title, because one cannot compel tolerance. One can compel certain kinds of behaviors, but we have a sense that tolerance is not just an action, but it's also an attitude. And the state can't compel people's attitudes. The state can't compel anybody to believe anything. But it can certainly compel people to act in certain ways, right, through the police powers that it has and the ability to deprive people of jobs and livelihood. So certainly the future may be very difficult, particularly for conservative Christians in certain kinds of positions in the economy. And so we're kind of seeing them now in the wedding industry. And if the Arlene Flowers case gets decided by the court, or if this second Jack Phillips case gets decided by the Supreme Court against freedom of speech and against free exercise of religion, it probably will drive conservative Christians out of the wedding industry. And then there may be a different industry targeted after that.
Dr. Darryl Paul is professor of political science at Williams College. He's author of the book From Tolerance to Equality, How Elites Brought America to Same-Sex Marriage, and a recent column for First Things titled Compelled Tolerance. You can read it and purchase From Tolerance to Equality at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Paul, thanks.
I'm very glad to do it. Thank you.
I am confident that Jack Phillips' story will be part of Dr. Ryan Anderson's presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas. Ryan will be making the case for our first freedoms. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free, courtesy of Wittenberg Academy. Find out more about the premier conference for Christian laity at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. On the other side of the break on this Wednesday afternoon, we're going to talk about Chelsea Clinton's recent comment about abortion and economic growth. She says abortion's been good for the economy since 1973. Jeff Jacoby, columnist for the Boston Globe, author of a recent column there titled Chelsea Clinton's Twisted Argument About Abortion and Economic Growth, will respond.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When the historian's ideological bias distorts or ignores evidence from the past, a bad kind of revisionism emerges.
Dr. Mark Kaltoff of Hillsdale College talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
It masquerades as honest history. Such revisionism needs to be exposed and dismantled. It undermines proper understanding of our world. It has been said those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. In this case, failure to expose bad revisionism means that those who do not know the past are condemned to suffer at the hands of biased ideologues who claim they do.
You can meet and hear Dr. Mark Kaltoff making the case against revisionist history at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.